Hi there, I'm Valérie Legras and you are listening to Textures. Textures is a podcast about art, design and entrepreneurship. In each episode, I chat with artists, designers, creators and innovators. The people who add textures to our world. In each episode, you will meet with creative minds, discover their world, their work and how they made it happen. Texture is an informal and open conversation about living and leading a creative life. Today, I am meeting with Mary Singleton, a local painter here in New Orleans. Mary is known for her bright, fauvist-influenced, contemporary and figurative floral paintings. She draws inspiration from the tropical flora of New Orleans. Mary's life has been punctuated by several traumas, and art became a therapy and a way of expressing yourself. I know you will love what Mary has to say. Let's learn about her journey. Hi, Mary. Thank you for having me in your beautiful studio here in Mid-City. I'm very lucky because we are very, very close from each other.
Yes, right around the corner from you.
Yeah, so Mary, you are a painter, an artist. I see on your work that you're very, very physical. You really work, you know, not only with a brush, but it looks like you really go deep into the paint. You can say that, the paint?
Go deep into it? Yeah, paint can be thick. I think that's okay.
Okay. So as a child, did you play with color tube or do you play with brushes? How did it start?
I always remember art being a part of my life. I don't remember the genesis of it. It just kind of always was there. It was always something I did. So I don't know when it started. I do remember being in elementary school and, you know, the class would be doing something like a papier-mâché mask, and I would get so sucked into it that the rest of the class would move on and the teacher would let me go on. And I think at one point I made a 6-foot-tall dragon out of papier-mâché, which...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, the initial project was just a mask, so...
Thing big.
Yeah, so it was something that I always just kind of honed in on and got lost into.
And so you were on family, you know, your family was into art, or is just coming from your side?
No. I think my birth father, who died when I was very young, he was a photographer, but my father that really raised me, my second dad, he is a mechanical engineer, so not very artistic, very by the book, straightforward. My mom's a financial planner, but they both loved mid-century modern design growing up, so we were surrounded by great design, surrounded by what I consider art and design.
Yeah, because at 15 years old, your mom and your dad moved into an amazing house in Baton Rouge. That was very special.
So they moved into the what's known as the Crawford House. So it's a mid-century modern house by the architect Wall Snyder, who I might get some of these specifics wrong because I'm not very great with remembering details, but Wall Snyder designed a house for the Bacardi family, like Bacardi Rum in Cuba, and houses in South Beach. And I believe that the house in Baton Rouge that we lived in is the only one outside of that area. So, and it's beautiful. It was lived in by a man named Hamilton Crawford, who, I can't really remember. I know he was a builder and an architect himself, but, it's escaping my brain to how to describe him. I do know that he did a lot for the community. I don't know if saying the word modular housing is correct, but it was almost like those Sears houses that you could order back in the 50s. So he did that. And he, instead of living anywhere else, he chose to make his home in the middle of Baton Rouge, in the middle of what is actually known as Mid-City in Baton Rouge. So we're in Mid-City now in New Orleans, but I grew up in Mid-City in Baton Rouge.
And I think that now this house is protected. I think you and
they're
your family...
They're trying to protect it. Yes. So kind of a sleazy deal happened, and my parents were taken advantage of by a developer. And then an investor purchased the property to save it from demolition, and we're trying to get it listed as a landmark currently, but that has a bunch of different steps in it. So we've passed one step, and there's a few more before it's officially listed.
So how does it feel like to be raised in a house like very special?
it felt very special, and it makes you appreciate other special things when you see them out in the world. You know, growing up, you go to friends' houses, and their houses were just, I mean, they were just there. They were houses. There was nothing wrong with them, but they didn't awe you. They didn't inspire you. But to have people come and knock on our door and ask to get a tour of the home, saying that they've always loved it, that it was so singular, so special, I think that affects you, because you grow up, if you grow up living in a piece of art, then when you go out into the world, you really miss art because you're not as surrounded by it. So, you know, moving into my first apartment in my 20s, oh, this stinks. Where's the sunken 1950 tiled bathtub and the, you know, all of the amenities of the 50s that we had and all of the wonderful design? So I ended up trying to create that with, you know, little to no budget in my early 20s. And that kind of leads you just to make art because...
Yeah, and become creative.
I can make the beauty myself.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love that. So you, as you mentioned, you have been raised in Baton Rouge. So after high school, you went to college.
I did. I went to LSU for, believe, one semester, maybe two. Lost my TOPS because, you know, they have the TOPS program. That's a scholarship program. So lost that by being just like a normal 19-year-old not going to class. And dropped out of college for, I'm not sure how many years, maybe a year or two, and then ended up going to South Carolina. And for whatever reason, I chose a tiny town called Hartsville, South Carolina. I think I toured maybe 5 colleges with my parents at the time, and that one spoke to me. That one, I was drawn to it, and it was called Coker College. And turns out when we were driving up there, with all of the stuff packed into the back of a van, my mom goes, oh, you know your grandmother, the one you're named after, Mary Bell, she was born and raised in this town right here. The one directly next to it, like the sister town to Hartsville, South Carolina, it's called Mackbee, was the one where my grandmother, my namesake, was born and raised. What are the chances that I would pick that town?
Yeah, it was a call.
Yeah, so I do believe it was meant to be, even though there were some, you know, not everything that's meant to be is easy. I'll just say that.
So you studied art there?
Yes, I did. I studied art for, I believe, 1 or 2 semesters. And I ended up having a run-in with one of the professors there who I would probably describe him as a very talented artist, but a terrible person.
Very abusive, I think.
Yeah, he was very abusive to his students. I remember in one critique, I believe he ripped someone's paper off the wall and wrote the word no on the ground and just walked out. I mean, he was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. But he did not like me. And we did not get along. I did not bow to that. That kind of stuff really didn't intimidate me, and I wasn't really interested in buying into that kind of behavior. And he set his sights on me, and I ended up getting expelled from his class. And I tried to fight it, but because it was a private college and not a public college like LSU, the system for fighting that is basically he had jurisdiction over his class. And so I really didn't have any recourse. And I remember being in the dean's office, you know, crying, trying to make sense of all this, because I think I'm 22 at the time. And she tells me that I obviously have a good eye, but I don't have what it takes to be an artist, so I should give up.
Bang. That's hard.
It was soul-crushing. It's terrible. Why would anyone in a position to nurture and teach say that, regardless if you believe it's true? Like, it's uncalled for. It's completely uncalled for. There's no reason to ever say that to anyone. No wonder some people say, you know, one of the things I do is I teach at a nursing home. And some of them say, I've never picked up a brush before. I'm 87. I'm like, that's not too late. Go ahead and do it. You know, that person could have been told that when they were 22. And we might have missed out on a really big talent because of that. So I think I didn't paint for about 2 or 3 years after that at all. Didn't paint or draw. Maybe I kept a sketchbook and I doodled. I think I worked at a coffee shop and I probably just doodled on napkins at the time. That was all I did because it was so crushing to have someone who is an authority figure say that.
So you just didn't draw too much at that time. But on the other hand, I remember we spoke one time when we met. You said you had you use art as a therapy.
I mean,
you obviously had some. You mentioned that you lost your dad at a very early age, and it was very sudden and very traumatic. And you also had some other losses in your family.
That was my sister.
Yeah. So all of this was, of course, is very traumatizing. And art was very helpful for you and a necessity. And I think you mentioned that your mom was very encouraging this experience. You know, so if you...
Yeah, she... I don't know that she understands me, but she's never stifled me in any way. And being a financial planner, I think it's probably pretty rare that someone like that would encourage their daughter as much as I can, as much as she did. She's always told me that from a very young age, she saw what it did for me. She would call it getting in the zone. She would say, I would just get in a zone and time would disappear. And I would work on something for hours and hours, and she had never saw me so fulfilled. So I think she saw what was best for me as her daughter and said, there's no other choice for her. She has to pursue this. This is good for her. But speaking to the way that it's therapy for me, I think that when the outside world ceases to make sense, when you go through such a traumatic loss at a young age, I could make sense of what was on a piece of paper. You know, I was in control of that. That was something I was in control of. It's something I could dive into that wasn't scary or weird. Wasn't something that was going to surprise me with some traumatic event. You know, it was very therapeutic to be able to put my all into that and to be able to create something. So I think that although before the traumatic losses happened, I painted and I was involved with art in small ways and I had an aptitude for it. I think when the traumatic loss happened, I think I just really dove right into it because I needed it. I needed it to save me.
And today you mentioned that it's still a therapy and your style evolved, you know, for the years.
Mm-hmm.
And you have many styles and you're very talented in many areas.
I know, and sometimes you see my Instagram and you say, oh, this is a new one.
So it's a therapy, as you mentioned. So you mentioned you're drawing on your own and you're in your really your world.
Mm-hmm.
However, at some point, did you join a group to paint or, you know, because sometimes therapy is good by yourself, but it's also good to be with a support group.
Yeah. So when I was in South Carolina, back when I was expelled from college and had that terrible experience where they told me that I would never make it as an artist, I didn't paint for about two, three years after that. And it was probably because of my friend group at the time that I picked up a paintbrush again. They were all musicians, very creative people, artists, and we would spend a lot of time together and create things together. And so I think it was probably just being around that energy and seeing how that sense of community that came along with it. I think that was a very nurturing and safe way for me to go back into art. That wasn't just I'm going to make this solitary thing by myself and put it out into the world. It was more like I made it with a group of friends and with some people holding my hands.
Did you try on other means of expression, like clay, or it was always painting?
I hate clay. I do. I'm not good at it. I find clay very disappointing because you make something and then you put it in the kiln and then it could blow up.
That's
true. Just get destroyed. And then you've spent all this time and you're at the mercy of the heat and the clay. And I just, anything that requires an amount of technical knowledge, or it's, you know, clay's kind of like baking and that you can only do certain things with certain things. Anything that requires me to think in that way and kind of out of the moment, I don't like to work in that type of medium.
So it was really, you know, painting from the beginning.
Oh yeah, it was really just painting, pretty much painting. I think that I tried clay. Oh, I was terrible at sculpture. And I went, when I went back to LSU in my late 20s, I was terrible at sculpture. My professors knew it. They just were kind of like, oh, well, he just needed to take this elective, so we'll just go ahead and get it out of the way.
Yeah, so after your Carolina experience, you came back to Louisiana.
I did. I came back to Louisiana. This was about the time that I know I'd spoke earlier about losing my sister. My sister got sick My sister had cancer, and then my dad had cancer. So I moved in with my family and came back here to help be around them and just help through that time.
And were you able to paint at that time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So at that time, because I was living with them, I didn't have a lot of bills. And I started to paint more. I had more free time. And I got into my first gallery just by going in and getting something framed. And they really liked it. And they asked to see more. And it was a small gallery. It was called Rukuku.
In New Orleans?
It was in Baton Rouge. It was in Baton Rouge. It's an area called Circa 1857. It's in, I guess it would call it the Garden District in Baton Rouge. They were very supportive, and it was a wonderful first gallery experience.
Well, that's good for
you. Yeah, it was great. So, but I didn't really know what to do with that experience at the time because I was in my early 20s and probably didn't have as much motivation to take my career forward and didn't really know what I was doing. So,
but did you have in mind at that time that you wanted to embrace your passion as a career?
No, I didn't think it was possible. I thought I had to get a real job. I thought that I had to go to college.
I like when you mentioned the real job.
Yeah, I know. Quote unquote real job. I thought I had, I didn't think it was possible because it in a town like Baton Rouge, as much as I love Baton Rouge, there aren't people doing that there. There really aren't artists and creative types making a living there. So it wasn't until I moved to New Orleans 2 years ago and I see all of these creative people and that's how they make their living. It's their career. And I thought, well, I'm going to try that.
Yeah, you can be yourself here.
Yeah, I can. And it's a city that supports that, you know? And so when I was in Baton Rouge, I just thought I had to go get an office job and I'll do this on the weekends or nights or whatever. And then I moved to New Orleans and I thought, well, hey, I don't want to do that. I'm gonna do what I want to do. I'm going to at least try it.
So tell us about your inspiration, because you have styles that are very, very different. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do amazing portrait. You also do amazing botanical, representation. And it's really depend of the mood of a moment.
Yeah, it kind of does depend on my mood. I think that goes back to the art being therapy aspect of it for me. It's what needs to come out of me at the time. I did the portraiture mixed in with the botanicals about 2 years ago. And I think the portraiture aspect of it was very safe for me because I'm good at painting faces and I know how to do it. It was a little bit, you know, jumping in and trying to figure out what your style is, you need a certain amount of courage to do that, you know, to create a whole body of work on a certain style. So I feel like it has taken me a little bit of time to try and figure out what my style is and what it's going to be.
Style evolves constantly anyway, you know.
I know.
Thanks God.
I know. I'm just not a formulaic painter. I think some people thrive with the boundaries of a formula. You know, I paint the canvas red first and then I paint these green leaves on. I think that is that for some people that works, that repetition, there's comfort in that. But for me, if I do one thing the same way twice, I get so bored.
So you don't do portrait anymore right now. Mm-hmm. So at some point, where is the switch? It's like a break or it's just like a smooth transition?
I just enjoy doing the botanicals around the faces more. So I was like, why am I doing the faces? Why do I keep the faces in here? I like the faces. I like the way they look. But I felt I had more to express through the botanicals than through the faces. So I dropped them.
And so you paint with absolutely a lot of color. And you can tell that you are in a good mood.
Because,
I mean, your therapy is working very well because everything is so bright, so joyful, so bold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually, when you're talking about lots of color, I actually had a bunch of wine one night and I bought the domain name stopbeige.com.
That's interesting.
So if you go to stopbeige.com, it redirects to my painting website.
Oh, that's so funny.
I don't know. I just, I think life's too short for playing it safe with color. I think color's beautiful. I think it's vibrant. I think it can change your mood. I think it can inspire. So I just appreciate being surrounded by color at all times.
Yeah, and what you can see in the studio, you have this, I mean, this is amazing what, you know, you're surrounded by amazing very powerful vibes,
very
energetic. And, you know, your style, we talk about you are on a canvas, you paint the faces, the portraits, and then you paint the botanical, and you have a certain style. And like a couple of days ago, we just saw you put, you know, the paper on the ground and just, you know, just paint on the floor, basically. I mean, on the paper, but instead of having the vertical canvas or the vertical paper, you just decide to just put it on the ground, floor.
It's interesting to see as a painter what something like that, how something small like that, you wouldn't think, you know, oh, if I put this piece of paper on the wall and I paint it, it might look one way, but if I put it on the floor, it's going to look completely different. But for me, it does affect me that way. You know, because I'm so physical, if I'm standing in front of a piece of paper or a canvas, and I'm going to have a very different movement in my hands and my shoulders. I mean, just thinking about how your body works, than if I'm leaning over a piece of paper or a canvas. So the ones that I just created that you were talking about, I put on the floor, they're very large pieces of paper, and I actually just turned them and walked around them the entire time, which you can't do when it's on a wall. I mean, you could turn it, but you can't really walk around it in that moment and give yourself over to the moment. It has to be deliberate. I'm going to take it off, I'm going to turn it over, and then, you know. And I sometimes work like that too on big canvases, but it almost felt very lyrical and like a dance when they're on the floor and you can just walk around them and draw and paint.
You know, and I really invite the listener to go on your Instagram, because I can see, just like these last days, I can see a big shift into your the approach of your art.
Yeah, it's that fossil series. So I do love to do my big, bold botanicals that are very bright colors, but then I have a series called the Fossils series, which things are a little bit more linear. There's a little bit more contour drawing, so that not every leaf is filled in, not every cell in the leaf is filled in. So it's a lot more line work, and it's nice to be able to have that expression. And then when I'm get a little sick of that type of work, I go back to my big bold botanicals that have every color in the rainbow and lots of thick paint. And so it's nice to have the two that I can shift back and forth.
Well, you look like at a happy place right now.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, the therapy is working very well.
Yes, it is. All forms of therapy work very well.
That's good. You know, as an artist, you are in your studio. It can be also a very lonely journey, because, you know, it's some artists work in a community and they can share a studio with other people. It's not the case for everyone. So how do you organize your day?
That's a good question.
I mean, you don't have to go in detail, you know, but, you know, it's pretty physical. It's pretty intense when you paint. It takes a lot of brain, a lot of energy. And just how do you manage?
I think I have to paint in spurts. So there's, you know, you think of a job where you go to it for 8 hours a day. It's not, being in the studio is not like that. You have to break it up so you don't get burnt out, because when you are working on a piece and you are putting that much of yourself into it, it can be very draining to do it for too long. So I'll do it in spurts. I usually get up and go to City Park, where I see a lot of my inspiration. They have the big palmettos and the greenery and the sculpture garden. So I go for a walk in City Park, and then I'll come back, and normally I'll start something. I find that starting something is a nice warm-up. I don't like to walk into the studio and finish something. So if there's a piece I've been working on for a week, I'm not going to finish it in that moment. I'm going to start something new. And that gets my brain warmed up. It gets my heart warmed up. It gets my hands. It gets, you know, just warms up everything and loosens me up a little bit, so that I can have the courage to go on to the other things that I'm working on. And usually I'll work a few hours, take a break, a few more hours. But I also like to break up that time by what I listen to. Listen to a lot of podcasts.
That's good.
Yeah.
Me too. I love that.
You would never know it from seeing my work, but I actually listen to a lot of true crime podcasts while I'm painting.
You're not the only one. You know, I know a lot of people. I was surprised, but it's really something that people enjoy.
I love My Favorite Murder. That's probably one of my favorite. But yeah, I listen to a lot of true crime, some political podcasts. But yeah, you would never know it. I think that there's something to be said for your left brain having something to do so that you can access your right brain without your left brain getting involved.
That's true. Absolutely.
So I think that helps to have something intellectual coming into my ears, so that I can like, yeah, turn that off. So I'm not going, oh, well, why did you make that mark right there? That wasn't a good one. Because that's what your left brain does. You know, your left brain's like, are you sure about that? And, you know, your right brain's the one that can just flow and free and come up with stuff. So I like to give that part of my brain something to do so that I'm free to work.
So here in New Orleans, after a couple of months, you just put your work out there.
Yeah.
I think you had some different pop-up in shops and gallery after.
So when I was living in Baton Rouge, I met Sarah Killen and Margaret Shea. And they were going to start a shop. It's called St. Claude Social Club. And so
in New Orleans.
In New Orleans. And they approached us. My partner is a graphic designer. And so I hand drew the lettering for their store, and he turned it into branding for them. And when we moved to New Orleans, they have been so supportive of my work and fans of mine. So they offered to have a pop-up one-night shop. And I believe it was in December of 2017, I'm going to say. And I, you know, I hadn't shown my work in years at that point anywhere, really. I hadn't even thought about this being a career of mine. I just thought it would be something, like I said before, like I would do it on weekends. And I put my all into it, and that's when I did those figurative pieces.
That's how I found about you.
Really?
Yes.
It was through them?
Yes.
Oh,
definitely.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and that's how I started to follow your work.
Yeah. I still really love that body of work. I just, for some reason, can't produce it anymore. So there have been times where people have approached me and said, can you produce that? I'm like, I really don't even know how to do that. I wouldn't even know how to start that right now. Feels like a different person made those.
But it's good because somehow it also makes your art very special, because it's almost like a limited edition.
Yeah, they're singular.
Just like in Picasso. Yeah. Picasso had the blue period and then the pink period and then the cubism. You know, you have different
phases in your
life. Yeah,
so don't go ask him for something blue while he's in his pink period.
Exactly.
He can't do it. That's kind of how me does. Like, don't... I can't produce those more of those portrait style works now. It's just it feels like my hand has gotten a little too loose to do something like that. You know, those are a little too representational, and I've kind of gone the way of floral and botanical abstraction in a way. So it's my brain's not even thinking that.
And it's good because, you know, in a creative when you have a creative mind and you start a project, I mean, as an interior designer, for instance, you know where you start, you never know how you're going, you know, where you're going to end. And that's the beauty of it. It's
right.
Just constant evolution.
Do you think some people work that way, though? I think some people know what the end product is going to look like.
I think so.
I think some people must work like
different
that.
Brand, you know,
yeah,
that's fine.
Different
nothing
type
wrong
of
about
brain.
It.
My brain definitely doesn't work like that. It doesn't cooperate enough for that to happen. There have been times I've tried to work that way. Commission work is like that, you know, because someone will come to you and say, can you create this piece that you did in the past, but we want it in these colors? And
yeah, it's a little tricky.
Yeah, those are tricky because you know where it needs to end up for the client to be happy. So those can take a little bit longer for me because I have to kind of rein it in. But while I'm doing those, I always have something next to it. It's a couple pieces on the other side of the studio that are the experimentation land, you know, so I can still have that exploration while I'm creating something very specific.
So from the pop-up, you know, show in New Orleans, I think people just start following you on Instagram, and I think Instagram was a big.
Oh, Instagram's been huge for that. Social media has been huge. And I didn't really realize it at the time. You know, I think I was just posting pictures of my dog and some art at that time, but I really kind of started to focus a little more on what I was sharing and decided I'm really going to go for this. And that is the best way for me to reach people, for people to get a glimpse into my studio and get a glimpse of what I'm creating is social media. You know, I can go directly to the people who are interested in my work with that. So it's been a great tool.
And in the same time, you also now have more galleries coming to you. You know, not only in New Orleans, but outside of the state, I believe.
I have one in Birmingham, Alabama, South Carolina. I work with a wonderful designer up there. And I just signed with a gallery in Dallas and Fort Worth. So, going to be delivering paintings to them very soon. So I have Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Birmingham, Greenville, South Carolina, and Texas.
That's big. It's growing.
It's growing. I never would have thought that If you had asked me 2 years ago that I would be here, I wouldn't have thought that.
Right now, there is a big trend for artists turning their work into wallpaper or fabric. Is that something you want to consider, or something that maybe is not, you're not very attracted by it?
I do consider it, but I worry what that does in the long term. You know, my pieces are unique and special, and like you said, with the series, that they're kind of like a limited run. I mean, you're never going to get the same painting twice. I wonder what that would do if I created reproductions of them to that level. I do offer limited edition prints, but those are through my studio. I know the quality that they are coming out as, and they are very limited run. Once they're done, they're done.
Yeah, that's
so
sense.
I have a little more control, so I'm okay with that, but I worry about licensing and not having the control. I worry what that would do.
And it's not you, you know, because it's very static. When I say static, it's like just you have a lot of vibrance in your art. You have a lot of depth. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, you have thickness. I don't know how you can say that in English, but it's you don't have a texture that you cannot find when it's printed.
Right.
You know, screen printed.
And I have done things for specific projects, like through Anne Connolly Fine Art in Baton Rouge. I worked on, I guess it's going to be considered a wallpaper or a wall covering. I created these watercolor textures, and they scanned them, and they're reproducing them for a hospital. So, but that's a one, you know, they commissioned me to make those, and it's not like those wallpapers are being sold all across the country and things like that. So it was very project specific. So I like the idea of things being project specific, because then they're still very unique. They're for that project, and that's it.
So, just wanting to speak about your inspiration. You talk about going to City Park. Of course, you're very inspired by nature.
Yes.
And I think one of your dreams is to be living outside in the country.
Oh, I want 10 dachshunds and a bunch of chickens. And I just want to step out my back door into my studio in the backyard. And of course, that might get very lonely. So talk to me in like 15 years and see if I got that and see if that's what I still want.
I will call you. But so beside the nature, do you find inspiration in other artists? Do you go to art show? You have mantras. I don't know. How do you get out of your studio and just go seek for something that's going to nourish you?
I find that I love going to museums and other galleries for shows, but when I go to them, I feel the need to go back to my studio and make something. It's more like I can do that too. I'm going to go do it now. You know, it's more of a, and we're not going to say it's competitive, but it's more of like a, it gives me that drive to go create. So I don't necessarily find it nourishing to go there. It's inspiring, and I like to see what my peers are doing. But it gets my brain working. You know, I try and sit there and analyze their work. How did they create it? What kind of
experimenting?
Yeah. So it does feel a little bit like work when I go to those things. Although it is inspiring, I don't want it to sound like it's not inspiring. It is, but it gets my brain moving in a certain way. Whereas if I almost feel like I need to rush home to the studio and create. So it's not so much soul nourishing. I find going out into nature more of that replenishing, inspiring activity.
So I also know you are teaching art.
I do, yeah. When we lived in Baton Rouge, I started teaching at St. James Place, which is a retirement community and assisted living. And when we moved to New Orleans, I kept that role. And so I'm the resident art teacher at St. James Place. So every Monday I get up and I drive to Baton Rouge and teach. Well, I do teach a chair yoga class in the morning, and then in the afternoon I teach my art classes.
And you also teach yoga, I believe.
I do. I went through yoga training a few years ago, and there was a time where I was teaching art, teaching yoga. I had a day job, and I was trying to produce art, and I kind of had to streamline what I was doing because my brain felt pulled in too many different directions. So I only teach the one chair yoga class now. And just keep the practice personal.
So in your creative journey, what's next?
I guess trying to figure out how to balance it all. You know, there's been opportunities that have come along, and you know, you can, when your career is very young, every opportunity that comes along feels like the right one. And now you have to be a little more selective. Not every opportunity that comes along is the right opportunity. So it's trying to navigate and pick the right way to go, the right way to do this. And so it's requiring a little more forethought. So thinking about that, thinking about the longevity of what I want to do. And I don't know, I just want to paint big. I want a bigger studio. I want to paint big.
You have a tendency to paint very big already, and I like that. And you know, you just like your studio is getting too small at some point.
It is. Well, the scale in 2 years has gone up, and I really have outgrown my home studio, and I really do need a larger space because I'm tripping over paintings at this point. And I would love it. I close my eyes and I see it. It's like, it's just a big place with a bunch of blank walls, and I can have all the different series up and, you know, work for hours and never run out of room.
Well, Mary, I have to say that for someone who has been told that you didn't have what it takes to be an artist, you are absolutely amazing.
Well, thank you. Can we send this podcast to my old professor?
Absolutely. I'm all for it.
Okay, good.
Well, Mary, is there anyone in the city that you would like to hear in this podcast?
Ooh. I think I would love to hear from Jamie and Maddie that run Femizance or have started Femizance. I think that the way that they have merged art with community, with activism, I think that would be a really interesting podcast to listen to.
Yeah, can you develop a little bit? Because I know you've been, you know...
I've shown my work with them a few times now. And I love the fact that in New Orleans, even though I'm an introvert and I never really leave my studio or my house, when I do venture out, I find really supportive, strong women who have taken control of their careers, like you, and like Maddie and like Jamie. And, you know, I just think that there's a community out there and we're all empowering each other to have our own voice. And I think that they're kind of at the forefront of that in this city.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
And Mary, thank you so much for having me in your studio.
Oh, thank you for coming over.
Thank you to Mary for joining me for this episode of Textures, and thank you for listening. If you want to find out more about Mary and her work, visit her website at marysingleton.net and her Instagram at marysingletonstudio. I will include all links in the podcast page at valerielegras.com/podcast. If you like this episode, follow us on Instagram at textures.podcast. Take the time to review us and do not hesitate to share with your friend. Reviewing on your favorite platform is a great way to support our creative community. Thank you for listening. À bientôt.